my principal mentor, my angel, John F. Kennedy, the real Flash Gordon, was the one who embarked us on this wild ride to go to the moon. And so I would like to begin, as we have been doing for the last 4 weeks, by recalling that amazing moment when he gave that speech at Rice University. And then we'll continue and we'll interview our own Flash Gordon, Laraji, whose name is, former name is Edward Gordon. So you have two would-be Flash Gordons on this show tonight, Laraji and me. And I dare say that there's a lot of Flash Gordon and Andrew Curry and Scott Teeters. So let us begin the teleplay with this stirring speech.
We meet in an hour of change and challenge, in a decade of hope and fear, in an age of both knowledge and ignorance. The greater our knowledge increases, the greater our ignorance unfolds. No man can fully grasp how far and how fast we've come. But condense, if you will, the 50,000 years of man's recorded history in a time span of but a half a century. Stated in these terms, we know very little about the first 40 years, except at the end of them, advanced man had learned to use the skins of animals to cover them. Then about 10 years ago, under this standard, man emerged from his caves to construct other kinds of shelter. Only 5 years ago, man learned to write and use a cart with wheels. Christianity began less than 2 years ago. The printing press came this year. And then less than 2 months ago, during this whole 50-year span of human history, the steam engine provided a new source of power. Newton explored the meaning of gravity. Last month, electric lights and telephones and automobiles and airplanes became available. Only last week did we develop penicillin and television and nuclear power. This is a breathtaking pace. And such a pace cannot help but create new ills, as it is spelled over. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, rest. But wait, if this capsule history of our progress teaches us anything, it is that man in his quest for knowledge and progress is determined and cannot be deterred. We shall send to the moon, 240,000 miles away, a giant rocket more than 300 feet tall on an untried mission to an unknown celestial body, and then return it safely to Earth. But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why 35 years ago, why the Atlantic? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone. And therefore, as we set sail, we ask God's blessing on the most hazardous and dangerous and greatest adventure man has ever embarked.
Thank you.
Well, there we have the start. Strange beeping, unusual sounds, and roaring noises, which is actually what the strange sounds sounded like. Now, the problem is that we, as I broke the story 12 years ago, I've been waiting and waiting for NASA to release the real tapes, and they have not done so. So today, tonight, later on, the second hour, we're going to do the teleplay, where you are going to hear the discussions that went on the far side of the moon between John Young, Tom Stafford, and Gene Cernan. Before I go on, I must take pause to wish my most sincere sympathies and deep condolences to the President of the United States, Donald Trump, and his family upon the loss of his dear brother, his best friend, Robert Trump. And if time permits, I will share with you insights that I have had about the nature of life, the soul, immortality. Now I will turn to my principal guest, Laraji, and say, Laraji, welcome to The Right Stuff and to our communion on the moon. I'd like to briefly trace your career, your bio. I know that you went to Howard University, correct?
Yeah.
And that, like yours truly, you are a patriotic American, and that you were involved in ROTC at the same time that I was, which was the Vietnam time.
Uh-huh.
And that both of us chose the path of peace rather than being drawn into a false flag war that was foisted on us by the very criminal who slew our mentor, the opening speaker of this show. He is so vile and so base, and he killed so many of my generation that I will not even mention his name. And I believe his name should be stricken from the list of presidents of the United States. So with that said, a little venom detoxed. Tell us, Laraji, after Howard, or let me ask you this, what did you major in Howard, and when did you graduate, and what path did you take after that?
I majored in piano, also music theory and composition.
We seem to have a waterfall, but it's appropriate because this is exactly what... Maybe it's divine providence coming in, giving us some special effects, because that noise, what we're hearing in the background, is really quite reminiscent of the little snippets that I've heard of the so-called music on the moon. They give me about 2 seconds or 3 seconds, and it's not quite a roar, but enjoy it, folks, because this is really what it was like
being
on the far side of the moon.
Unexpected sound.
Well, so usually courtesy of the New York City Police Department, which is why a subtitle of my show is The Sounds of New York City News. Oh, and there's a lot of news to cover, but we'll leave that to the end. Now, Laraji, so piano and music composition, and what was your goal? Were you going to be a classical musician or, as you are, a popular musician?
My goal at that time was to get enough breadth of music composition so that I would not feel like a trespasser in the world of composition. I wanted to get skills of learning how to compose, to be exposed to other composers, and to get in touch with my ability to compose sounds and music for didn't go to get a degree. I was there for 4 years. After Howard, I went to New York to pursue comedy and acting, thinking that would be a shortcut to getting the funds I would need to set up an apartment, get a piano, then settle down to serious compositional writing.
I see. Now, Andrew and Scott, if you wish to ask any questions of Laraji, please feel free to do so. And if you do, if you have any questions, just ask them now, because I'm going to turn to Laraji and ask him to play some music, a concert for our audience tonight. And if anyone is not muted, then please mute. And if not, let's see. Andrew, do you have a question of Laraji? I know you're an artist as well, and you were a musician as well. Please go right ahead.
Well, I mean, the main question would be what you told me, Robert, and that's basically the performance art that you did with Laraji and how he responded with his music. And so, Laraji, I don't know the dynamics between you guys, but was it something that you spontaneously responded to? And Robert, you may want to give us a little background on what it is you did exactly.
I'll let Laraji speak first.
Okay.
Somewhere along the way,
Can you get, Laraji, would you get closer to the mic, please?
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
So, can you hear me better now?
Yes. I will remind you that we met at the, Rabbi Gelberman's New Light Temple and interfaith ceremonies that he conducted.
Yes, and I was playing electric zither at that time, an instrument that was developed through experimentation and used that up meditation, Tai Chi, energy work, inspiration. Take care of the world. And I've done work with Robert. He's at the classes in the early 80s. Doing experimentation with its Tai Chi classes that helped to.
Okay, Laraji, one moment, please. I think I'm going to have to change the communications here a little bit, because that noise is really drowning you out. So with my apologies to a special listener who I have on, let's see. I'm going to have to disconnect one of our listeners, and I will send him the recording.
Oh, that's who it was.
Yeah, it's okay. All right, so let us continue. You were saying, Andrew asked you the question of how we became associated, and I was refreshing your memory, that it was through the interfaith community here in New York City.
Yes.
So you...
And you were doing Tai Chi, your demonstrations, and I was doing music for the programs there.
Right.
And we buddied up, and you invited me to share music for some of your Tai Chi classes in New York City, outdoors and indoors.
Right. Well, Andrew's question is a very interesting one. I don't generally speak about my dance career. But it was a spiritual dance career and a quest, because dance is one of the greatest art forms on the planet. It's a sign of high civilization. And I was called to Tai Chi after a career start in Kung Fu. But the violence of Kung Fu and, to be quite honest with you, the gangsterism and the thuggery of New York Chinatown, which is what I walked into. I did not know when I joined a Kung Fu school that these Kung Fu schools were associated with the Tongs, and that to get to the higher regions of them, you had to more or less become an enforcer. And when I realized that, I was very crestfallen and downcast. At the same time, the Tai Chi masters came into my life and invited me. They actually invited me to become a Tai Chi teacher. And I was told it's not something that they don't do for anyone. And if I didn't accept, I was a fool. And so I said to my friend, well, I ain't no fool. So I've related to you some of the spiritual experiences that I had and the visitation I had from my Tai Chi master and my initiation in 1975, which convinced me that I was born to do Tai Chi and I was chosen to spread the Tao, teach the way, the same way that Jesus taught. The Tao means the way. And the more I learned about Taoism, the more I came to the conclusion that Jesus not only traveled to India, but had traveled to China and received the teachings of the way and the power. The original classic of Taoism is called the Tao Te Ching. And that document translates into the way and the power. And of course, Jesus received it. And I believe that's what he was talking about when he said he was the way, the truth, and the life. So in the course of 7 years of intense study after my initiation, I discovered the oldest dance in the world that had preceded Tai Chi. Tai Chi had a mysterious origin. Nobody knew where it came from. The earliest written record was 1100. And the origins were very abstruse. Until I discovered a poem written in 755, and this was in 1978, by which time I had been studying Chinese for 5 years. And when I found this poem and read the Chinese, I realized that I had discovered the true origins of Tai Chi Chuan, which happened in the Tang Dynasty. And it's a really good topic, interesting topic, because when I follow the clues that were in the poem, the names of the protagonists, the name of the emperor, Xuanzong, an emperor who changed his name to Xuanzong, which means mysterious ancestor. It was the high point of the Tang Dynasty. But something happened to the emperor of China. It happened that in studying his life and trying to find the origins of this so-called rainbow dancing or the dance of the rainbow clothes and the feathered garments, I came upon a Chinese history book that said that that's another interesting story, but the Emperor Xuanzong of the Tang Dynasty had instructed his historians to record for posterity the fact that one day as he walked on the ramparts of the castle in Xi'an, which I visited in 1986, a moonship came down and landed on the ramparts of the castle, and that the moon people had come out of the moonship and had invited him to go with them to Penglai Shan, which is loosely translated fairyland or heaven, which means up there. So they took him to the moon. And while he was on the moon, the king, the emperor, was entertained by moon fairies danced in resplendent rainbow-colored garments. And he heard a celestial music that became his obsession. The next morning, the moon people brought the Chinese emperor back to earth. And it's a very interesting account. He stated that when he alighted, when they left, he could see the encampment that was like the Chinese village that had grown around the castle or the palace. And then he could see people cooking and going about, you know, their daily lives and wrestling and taking care of their sheep and their cattle and all the aspects of human life as he left. He said that when he came back, it was very early in the morning, and that as he came down, he could see the burnt out campfires and people starting to get up and, you know, washing their faces and getting ready for the day. And when he landed, he was so excited. He came out of the moon ship, and the first thing he did is he called his favorite wife, the Princess Yang Wei Fei, and said to her, "You have to learn this dance. I learned it from the moon people. I want you to learn it before I forget it. And I'm going to write down this music." And this music and this dance became a vogue. And it was a spin dance. It was a rapidly spinning dance that resulted in illumination, in enlightenment. And what I thought I'd found was, I thought that I'd found the origins of Sufism, which is also a whirling dervish type of dance. And so I recovered this dance that had been lost. It was lost 1,245 years ago. But in that, between 1978 and 1981, I recovered it. And I used to perform it with Laraji. He would begin to play his beautiful music, and I would begin slowly performing our traditional slow motion Tai Chi. And then the rhythm would pick up, and I would become a spin dancer. And I'll tell you the secret. It's called rainbow dancing, because you start to spin faster and faster, like ice skaters, but ice skaters on shoes. And the more slippery the floor, the faster the spin. And it leads into a trance state and a higher level of consciousness. And what happens is that all of reality turns into a stream of light. And every color that's in your environment, people's clothing, objects on the walls, things going by, they start to stream at the speed of light. And you don't make out the form. You only see the color of the stream. The more centered you are, the steadier the stream. If you're uncentered and wobbly, the waves start to oscillate like sine waves. And so I became quite expert in that. And that's what Laraji and I did for many years. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I remember one thing that happened in St. Matthew's Church over there on Fifth Avenue. That I had, my shoes used to wear out because of the spin, the friction, the soles used to wear out. So I got the idea that I would sew up my shoes with copper wire. And I performed this dance on a marble floor that was very highly polished. And I think if you go to that church today, you can still see the grooves in the floor that I left. I never told anybody till tonight, but that's what happened. So now I would like to turn to Laraji, having spoken about my dance and music. I would like him to do a bit of a concert for the, let's say, 10 more minutes, 15 minutes, so that you can enjoy the sounds of this unique artist and what was then called Celestial Vibrations. And let me ask Laraji, you do have an album, a new album coming out, which one coincidentally is called Something About the Sun, and the other one is about, who would have known it, about the moon. So tell us about your CDs, DVDs that are going to be released shortly.
It was released July the 17th on All Saint Records. It's available through Bandcamp and Amazon. It's solo piano improvisations. The first session is called Sun Piano, Sun Like in Solar. And the second release in September is entitled Moon Piano. And they're all grand piano solo improvisations done in a Unitarian church in Brooklyn. No sound effects, just great, serious classical piano, but with the feel that I get when I'm near a piano. I have a passion for piano improvisations, and these albums are expressions of that.
Wonderful. So, no further words needed. Let's join in and do a moon meditation with.
Yeah, I should admit, I'll be doing the moon meditation here on electric zither.
You also do chimes and flute and electric sounds. And the Raji is the artist who will provide the sounds of the music of the moon in the second hour when we play the radio play that we recorded this afternoon. So let's sit back and just enjoy your music. Let's say until let's go until the break, which will be about 10:56. We take a station break, and let me say here right now, folks, we're at the bottom of the hour. This is Revolution Radio, the world's largest, greatest, most wonderful listener-sponsored radio network on the internet, and it moves. It lives, it breathes because of your donations. So please go to freedomslips.com and make a donation. However great or however small, it all helps. And with that, let me turn the floor over to our artist in residence, La Raji.
searching church says.
Microphone muted. Trying to unmute my microphone.
We can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay. Sit,
Good. Thank you, Raji. And yeah. Just in time, because we have about 2 minutes before the break.
Okay.
Folks, it is an experience to attend a concert by Raji. And Raji, how about the laughing meditation? One of the things that Raji does in the middle of his concert, he'll stop and he'll say, it's time for a laughing meditation. So why don't we do a laughing meditation for 2 minutes until the break music comes on.
Okay, let's say a practical laughter meditation. Practice laughing in such a way as that we stimulate our thymus, which is in our chest. If you can focus on your chest beneath the breastbone and thump your thymus with your hand, just thump your breastbone with your hand and get in touch with that thumping sensation with your hand. Yep. Now we're going to relax the hand, and we're going to use our laughter voice traveling through our throat into our chest to create that thumping sensation in the same area, but with our laughter. So we take a deep breath and just focus in that same area.
And Scott and Andrew, you can open up your microphones and let's hear your laughs. Okay, here we go.
Information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that? For one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion, and as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Cynically these communes would take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look. It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, we're back to Earth, and now we're going to take off for the moon. Raji, thank you for that. And I especially enjoyed the 2 minutes that we had of the laughing meditation.
Of course.
Laughter is contagious. Is it not?
Tis indeed as were, as it were.
it is, lad. So, folks, you have to experience Laraji live. And I've been in audiences with 100 or 200 people, and he stops it, gets quiet, and starts the laughing meditation. And, you know, there's such a reluctance to laugh on the part of people. But once the waves, the paroxysms of laughter start moving through one person, they're contagious, and they start to contaminate the whole audience with mirth and joy and laughter for no reason other than enjoying a good laugh. And it's really quite a phenomenon. It's interesting to see it. Laraji will sit there and he'll start his laugh, and a variety of laughs, and everyone's really uptight. You know, I'm not going to laugh. And all of a sudden, another person starts to giggle, and then a third one and a fourth one. And all of a sudden, the whole place is in an uproar. And he has to bring it. He has to arrest it like a runaway locomotive. And then the concert continues. So that was a very pleasant reminiscence of those great times, you know. The late 70s, 80s, into the 90s in New York. And it's sad that we have been plunged into a well of misery, except some of us who, I guess, have long necks and can stretch our necks over the well and climb out. It is a trying time. And they say music soothes the savage beast, and so does laughter. So I would like to relate to you. I think I've mentioned it before that every day at 7 o'clock here in New York City, the tradition got started of banging pots and yelling and making calls and whistling and hooting out of the windows and on the streets, people sing out the windows. And I started in April with giving my jungle call, my favorite hero, the King of the Jungle. And all of a sudden, there popped up on my block a faux Tarzan, another Tarzan. And I was laughing. When he started, I would do it, and then he started. And he was doing it kind of operatically, a singer. He was singing it. And I thought, oh, you hear somebody's banging out there right now. It's not quite the right time, but they must have picked up the vibe. So I told my friend, hey, man, I'm Tarzan, he's Jane, because he was singing it like an opera singer. So before we go to the moon, I think I'd like to share this with you. And if you ever need some energy, if you ever need some help, just go, ah. It'll liven things up. It'll scare other people. If you need some energy, go right ahead and try it. And you can practice with Johnny Weissmuller on YouTube. And I did. And that's why I have an authentic. And this guy's gotten better. Now he starts singing it out the window at 7 o'clock. I give it back, and sometimes I'm looking at the clock. 7 o'clock, I'm going to be the first one. And I jump out there and we go back and forth. It's quite a lot of fun. And one day, the cops were right on 92nd Street. They were about to make the turn onto my street. I hurried up across the street to time it so that when they got their patrol car right alongside me, I bellowed it out in the street between the buildings with my hands cupped and a lot louder and a lot more melodious than what you just heard. And I think the cops got a real kick out of it. So we have to liven each other's spirits and enjoy life, because that's what it's for, isn't it? Hey, isn't that our civic obligation? The pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So let's live up to it. So now let's get on to our trip to the moon. And I'm going to begin by the launch, playing you the launch as it happened of Apollo 10. And then we'll journey to the moon and we'll have our lunar conversations and listen to the music of the moon. Then we'll come back and talk about what these guys said, because I'll tell you folks, reading the script is one thing in the silence of your own head. But when we rehearsed it and recorded it this afternoon, we had to go over it several times. And in the course of those rehearsals, we learned a lot more than just the sounds of what was coming through a radio that should not have been picking up anything on the far side of the moon, because it was assumed all radio transmissions emanate from Earth, and with the big old moon in the way, they should have heard nothing. And you will hear their reactions to this. So let's start with the launch. Let me make sure that we are still in sharing. Yes, we are in sharing mode. And so let's go to the launch of Apollo 10. John Young, Tom Stafford, and Gene Cernan. Ready to launch for the moon. And here we go. You may have to bring your audio up to hear it.
Now 90 seconds and counting. Now 90 and counting. The astronauts have turned off their ground communication at this time. However, they are on VHF and, of course, the S-band circuits, as well as the special astronaut communication circuit. 1 minute, 12 seconds, and counting. The vehicle tanks beginning to pressurize at this time. Our status board indicates that the third stage tanks are now pressurized. We're coming up on the 60-second mark. 60 seconds and counting. We are go for a mission to the moon at this time. The second stage tanks now pressurizing, and we're coming up on the power transfer. 50 seconds and counting. We have now switched to internal power satisfactorily on the batteries of the first stage, all three stages of the Saturn V vehicle. 40 seconds and counting. Tom Stafford making a final check of his computer. The vehicle, all stages pressurized at this time. We're waiting for the swing arms to come back. One should be coming back at this time, a second one at 17 seconds. Tom Stafford reports they are go. We're coming up in the 20-second mark. T-minus 20 seconds and counting. 17 seconds and counting. Guidance internal. 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9. We have ignition sequence start. Engines on. 5, 4, 3, 2, all engines running. Launch commit. Liftoff. We have liftoff 49 minutes past the hour. Stafford reports the clock has started. The tower is clear.
Tom Stafford acknowledges the roll and pitch program to put Apollo 10 on the proper course.
Because we are getting muffled up here now, the tremendous reverberations from that great engine. The cameras are shaking.
looks like it's go. Looks like everything is going very well. Literally so far. It's almost directly overhead here.
3.35
miles high. Pressure now at Jack Riley, Mission Control in Houston. Sound like Stafford's in. What a nice ride.
Cernan reporting what a ride.
Roger.
1 minute, 44 seconds, downrange 7 miles, 12 miles high.
They successfully passed through Max Q.
Roger, copy, Tom.
We're in communication from the spacecraft. You're in the voice of the command pilot, Tom Stafford. And the voice of the mission control in Houston.
Report engines are out.
Roger, copy, Tom. EES all 10.
That staging you saw there.
Roger.
That was the first stage.
On the second stage.
First stage blowing away from the rocket, leaving now just the second stage,
Roger,
third
Roger,
stage,
Roger,
and the rocket.
On the S2, it's looking good. Confirm EDS all.
Flight dynamics reports trajectory go at 3 minutes 9 seconds, downrange 81 miles, 46 miles high. Second plane separation, that's the skirt around the engines on the second stage.
Right now.
And the launch escape tower has just...
Right, sounded like it.
And we have guidance initiated.
We confirm that, Ben. Beautiful, Tom.
Listen, that beautiful communication from that command module.
Charlie Duke talking to Tom Stafford.
Yeah, I bet.
Just like old times, it's beautiful out there.
You guys sound ecstatic.
Man, this is a great story.
Charlie Bandit. Fantastic, babe, really.
Jeans. Cernan, fantastic.
Your go, trajectory got us, but good.
And there you have it, the launch of Apollo 10. It's entered Earth orbit, and as they entered Earth orbit, they prepared for several revolutions around the Earth before a burn that was called translunar injection, where they fired the rocket that put them on a course to intercept the moon in about 2 days, 3 days. It took 3 days to get there. Then they entered orbit around the moon and prepared for the multitasking that was involved in testing the burn, the main engine, into lunar orbit and a few turns around the moon to get a stabilized orbit that went from 60 miles to 120 miles and as high as 297 miles, as we'll find out when we hear the teleplay of their discussion when they started to go around the far side of the moon and the big surprise that they got. As I said, several turns around the moon, going through their checklists, detaching the LEM from the command module, leaving John Young alone. Must have been the loneliest place in the world that any human being had ever experienced. Because if your friends didn't come back, it was going to be a long, lonely trip, solitary trip back to Earth, and not a happy return without your friends, your colleagues, your soulmates. But fortunately, it turned out all right. Now, here's an interesting thing. They did descend. They undocked the lunar module from the command capsule, then began maneuvers to position themselves for a descent to within 8 miles of the surface of the moon. And when they were about 8 miles above it, they had to test the retro rockets, the descent engines, which were also the ascent engines. The engines that landed them on the moon during the soft landing were also the engines that were going to detach from the landing platform and boost them back up into orbit. And if any of those things had failed, we would never have arrived on the moon. It would have been, as pilots call it, augering in. But fortunately, divine providence and God was with us as he is always. As I say, God is my co-pilot and he's also my navigator. And so they were able to return. But there was a big secret that they kept to themselves in the capsule, and they kept to themselves for 45 years until around, well, actually it was around 2005, 2006, 14 years ago, that I was, you know, diving into NASA archives and plunging in, looking for pictures, looking for recordings, and I came up with this document, which all of you can find, by the way. I'll give you the name of the document. It is called AS-10, Apollo. AS is stands for Apollo. And it's Apollo 10 Lunar Module, LM, onboard voice transcription, recorded on the Lunar Module Onboard Recorder Data Storage Equipment Assembly, also known as the DSEA. Now, when you read this document and NASA's introduction to it, you find out that they didn't tell the astronauts they were being recorded. And then the astronauts, in wonder and in fear, because it was not an expected thing. You weren't supposed to hear a dang thing on the other side of the room. They decided that people might not believe them. They might think them screwy or hallucinating and that they might not fly again. So they decided not to tell NASA anything about it. And NASA didn't know anything about it until the craft landed and the DSEA was removed and the tape was played and then transcribed. And so that has remained a secret all these years. That was May 22nd of 1969 when Charlie Brown and Snoopy went to the moon. Charlie Brown was the command module, and Snoopy was the LEM. So with the help of my able co-pilot, my navigator, and my communications officer, this afternoon we recorded the transcript, which I had excised from 259 pages to extract all of the references to music that were uttered by these befuddled, bemused, and maybe slightly concerned, I won't use the word fear, slightly concerned astronauts as to what their ears were hearing. So I would like to play that for you now. And so let's go to the moon, and then we'll discuss the contents of this incredible journey. So here we go, folks, from Earth to the moon with Robert Morningstar, Scott Teeters, Andrew Curry, and Laraji, the musician of the moon. Mission time, 4 days, 6 hours, 12 minutes, and 43 seconds, Commander.
Hey, when do we fire the helium tanks?
Not yet, babe.
Okay. You want some more brownies?
No.
So go hungry.
That sounds
outer spacey, doesn't it? You hear that? That whistling sound?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Did you hear that whistling sound too?
Yes. Sounds like, you know, outer space to visit.
I wonder what it is.
Tom, is the station all burned off here on the front side of your window over there? Right?
Yes.
Mine's all burned off. Isn't that weird? Eerie? John? Ooh.
Yes, I got it too. And see who was outside.
You mark that set of features, Gino. I'm going to fix some grape juice, okay?
Okay, man. I've got you 269 miles over the horizon. Man, it's just fabulous.
Into LG's.
Roger, I'm on.
There's the one back picture of over there. I'll get that form with this camera. Yes, these pictures that the orbiter took are fantastic.
You bet. I'm locked on a side lobe.
Yes, we sure is getting high. Z?
Yes, 286 miles. Oh, this radar is great.
Yeah, I got it.
It's going to go right out to 310 miles, just like we said.
Is it really?
Yes, I'll tell you when you get to 297. You don't know when AOS is, do you?
Yes, I've got it written down. AOS for us is 102.25.
It's 102.1 for me.
Okay. 4 minutes, babe. Connect the ascent batteries.
Okay.
Okay. Standby bats 1 and 3. High voltage off. Reset bats 1. Well, that sure is weird music.
We're going to have to find out about that. Nobody will believe us.
Yes, it's a whistling. You know, like outer space.
Yes. Hey.
Okay, Tom. I'm going to call up P-20. We want to pressurize our APS here. You get your rendezvous radar breakers all in.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I'm locked onto him.
Okay.
There may be a side lobe.
Huh? Yeah. What happens now? It ain't doing, babe. Why don't you go ahead and lock your skin? Come on, eyes off again. Shit. Why don't you find them? Well, let me look this way. I'll see whether I can find them. We're going to get there. We got to pressurize and everything.
Yes, I know it. P-20 doesn't work worth a darn.
Tom, why don't you get them manually?
Okay. Okay, let's go up to P-00. Huh?
Pick them up manually. We need another mark at 10 minutes. God dang it. Houston, I'm putting you on OMS.
Roger, Gene.
OMNI, I just had a... We need another mark at 10 minutes. God dang. Houston, I'm putting you on OMNIs.
Roger, Gene.
OMNI, I just had a... Houston... We've got you on OMNIs. You hear Muton, that crazy whistling?
I can hear it.
That's really weird.
It is.
Snoop, Muton, go over the hill. You look good. We're all go here.
Roger, Charlie. I'll hit proceed at 12 minutes. Everything's looking good, and we're going to ignore the out-of-plane correction at CSI. Or...
Am I going to do the out-of-plane CSI?
That's affirmative.
Yes, 17 marks.
Snoop, Muton, say again, we didn't copy.
Roger. Everything's looking good. Roger. Everything's looking good. We're going to ignore the out-of-plane correction at CSI. Over.
Proceed. I've already been in PC. I'll figure this one out.
Think we need to put on the helmets and gloves for this one?
I don't think. I don't want to.
Let me try it, just to see what's like. That's not really a big thing, helmets and gloves.
It's 52.3.
What ground give us?
I'm glad we didn't torque up the platform.
How in the hell did we miss that?
We had to have someone on our side at that time.
Yes. Oh.
Listen to that eerie music.
You ready?
Yes, you go to HI.
Yep. Plus 45.3 and 0.6 I.
Okay. Oh,
gosh. Okay, okay. I'll go ahead and open the rendezvous radar circuit breaker.
What happened?
Open rendezvous radars. We're going to pitch down.
Boy, it got quiet.
Huh?
Didn't it? We got thrusters.
Oh, yes. Ready? Proceed.
And it just got quiet.
John, we're going to pitch down and have our X-axis towards you. You may lose our flashing light. Roger.
John, do you know we're going to burn now?
Roger.
Those numbers again. Gene, or what?
I'll put mine on. I'll tell you, John, that music is really weird. I know it. You composed it, huh?
I don't know, man.
No one will believe us. Okay, Tom, we're set until 35 minutes, 35 seconds, and we're at 4 minutes and 35 from the burn.
We pitch down. I know it's right, but why should I have a burn?
You should be 5.
Inertial.
Huh? You're looking at 105 inertial. Much better.
But why should I have down?
What?
Just down below me.
You got him below you? Where is he?
Reflection. You got him out there?
No.
Something's weird. Go ahead. Okay. If you didn't have an orb ray ball, you can tell where.
You wouldn't know where the hell you were. I'm looking at 270, and my orb ray balls, according to this thing, is pretty good. Tom, and we just updated it, 250.
Good.
That looks good.
I show you 3 minutes to burn.
Okay, I'll give you mark at 3, 2, 1, F.
Mark, aye, aye.
2, 3 minutes. You with us? Aye.
Yes, that's sync.
That's weird. Why should I see him down there?
Apollo 10, you are go for descent. End of transmission. And there you have it, folks. That was a very interesting conversation, full of mystery, full of puzzlement. For example, what was the guy doing under the craft when he was supposed to be in another quadrant? And why did he think it might be a reflection? All right, fellas, let's open up the conversation. We've had a lot of experience with this transcript now. I'd like to hear your thoughts and comments and possible questions you might have about it. I also would like to thank you. It took a lot of work to put that together. And as we were speaking this afternoon, I think we all derived some interesting insights aside from the music and the sounds. So let's start with our co-pilot, LEM pilot Gene Cernier, LMP. Scott Teeters.
Oops, sorry about that. That pesky mute button, I'm telling you.
Yes.
Yeah, I had two questions. During the subsequent Apollo missions, when the spacecraft went around the backside of the moon, did they hear similar sounds? Or was there ever any record of follow-up to these sounds?
I believe that they probably did, but they were briefed about it. It's a big secret. They still have not released the tapes. A young lady has been asking in the Freedom of Information, and she's gotten a couple of snippets of seconds, you know, and it sounds garbled. It sounds like long waves and a lot of ooh, ooh, like synthesizer music. But they have never released, and I don't believe those tapes, actually. You know, knowing NASA and its penchant for cover-up, if they say that they're releasing something, I'm still very skeptical. So it's still a big state secret, and I'm hoping that this audio that we've constructed, this facsimile, will prompt them to release the real stuff.
You know, they seem to have state secrets over some of the oddest things. As you were just elucidating that, I was thinking, a few weeks ago or maybe a month ago or so, we were talking about the crash at Roswell. And for decades, almost five decades, they kept saying, it's a weather balloon.
Right.
And then when the most recent time they came out and they said, it was a high-tech specialized weather balloon from the 1940s. Okay, yeah. I understand that back then in the context of 1947, maybe it was indeed a very high-tech advanced. No, we're not going to talk about this. But we've gone way beyond that. If that was true, okay, and I don't think that it is or was, but we went way beyond. There's no need to keep these kinds of high-level state secrets, such as what really happened at Roswell, this business with the music on the moon. I mean, it's you could say it was just an anomaly or a curiosity. But to be totally silent and no, we're not going to talk about that. Why? What's the big deal?
Because, Scott, if I may jump in now.
Sure.
I asked a question of Laraji at the beginning because Robert had informed me that how he met him was through, their history together. And I wanted to know from Laraji if he was responding to Robert's movements. And the reason why I asked that at the top of the show is because when we did this script earlier today, what occurred to me was that music or that sound or that symphony of sort of celestial music to me was feeling like it was responding to the spacecraft. I know that's a crazy speculation, but we've been talking about on this show that perhaps the moon is a hollow spacecraft. And if it is, it's probably incredibly ancient. And if we go with the model, this idea that our solar system is much more ancient, and if the moon is an ancient spacecraft, wouldn't music be one of the most elegant transponder signals of an incoming object moving or spinning into its space? I don't know. It's just it's something that came to me, you guys. And it's like, if it was, then they had to cover it up because it's showing an advanced technology. Totally speculative, way out on the limb. But that's why I initially asked Laraji, did you respond to his movements? And is that the music that you were giving? Because the transponder, my little concept here, could have been giving flight instructions in on how to land on this moon.
Laraji.
Yeah, I remember you doing the dance. I remember you whirling. And I responded visually through free association without getting very mental about the purpose and intention behind it.
And likewise, as I was performing the rainbow dancing, your music would enter. See, when I dance, I don't hear the music. It channels through my body. It goes into my nervous system. The music moves me. I'm not trying to be on the beat. Generally, I will feel a bass tone, and the bass tone is generally my rhythm. But once that bass tone gets into my body,
Revolution.